Hey everybody, this is Sensei Anthony on the Real Karate Podcast. It is Thursday, the 25th, January 2024. Sorry for my voice, I'm just getting over a cold. And I want to talk about the compromise in martial arts. Now, as a traditionalist at heart, I believe in traditional values with modern applications, which is to say that we fight differently because we don't carry weapons, we have closed-toed shoes, we fight on asphalt. All these things change how one's approach to fighting is, right? For example, for the people who favor their deep stances and they don't pivot when they punch, ask yourself why you don't. Or if you're willing to look at it in a more updated way, maybe why you should start. Right, there's a lot of ways to approach self-defense. In jiu-jitsu, do you favor guard techniques, or is your main concern to get on top and stay on top? Like, all these things can be argued back and forth, but what I want to talk about is how much you feel you should compromise in martial arts. Now, I was raised in the no glove, no pad era, and I think it's great. And I've gotten some recent kickback from, or pushback rather, from some of the parents, because they are uncomfortable with the idea of their children participating in martial arts the same way. Now, what I've told them 1,000 times and what I still hold is that full contact does not mean full power. So just because you're training with somebody with no gloves or pads, there are definitely rules, and not everybody gets to just start sparring right away. There are controls and restraint and restrictions put in place. No face shots, no striking the joints. You know what I mean? Like common sense stuff so that you can continue to train. And before I believed, before I actually ran a dojo, that you could just throw kids in there and make them start training hard. And what I found was that a lot of these kids are lacking in attention span and also just in physical aptitude. So more of my class than I like is spent building physical strength, and through physical difficulty their mental strength as well. For example, we do bear crawls across the floor. Think about yourself being on all fours crawling up and down the floor like Spider-Man, if you don't know what a bear crawl is, right? Now, we used to do a game that kids love to play on their feet, red light, green light. Now, I couldn't do that for bear crawls because when I said red light, a lot of the kids lacked the physical strength to stop themselves and they were landing on their face. Now, granted, I laughed, but some of the parents didn't think it was as funny as I did, so I compromised. We still do red light, green light, just on the feet. We still do bear crawls, just not with red light, green light. And as much as I feel like compromising often leads to watering down martial arts, it's my job to get them to the next level. And if they quit because it's hard immediately, I'll never get them to that level. Now, that being said, I am fully aware that that is the justification that a lot of people use for making martial arts ridiculously easy in terms of promotion and expectation. I'm absolutely aware of that. But I don't think that kids should be promoted if they've never been punched before or kicked before or done something that they find really uncomfortable physically. And I know people disagree with me with that. And even amongst my parents, which I find odd, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but like 80% of my student body are Latinos, Spanish speaking at home, bilingual in the world, right? And what I've had to remind some of the parents of is that they moved oftentimes to another country where they didn't even speak the language. That is infinitely more difficult than what their children are doing. So while they do bring their kids in for the discipline and self-defense and all the things that we teach, they also kind of blanch at the idea of it being really difficult for their kids. They forget how difficult it was for them. And I know that no parent wants their kids to go through difficulties or to suffer, but there's growth in suffering. As they say, there's no gold rings without suffering, right? So back to compromise. I've made it so that the lower belt spar under controlled circumstances with low power, but it's definitely no contact. I believe that from a psychological standpoint, not being afraid to mix it up with the person just because you don't have gloves on or pads, I think that's important psychologically. Now, a lot of people can disagree with that, and that's fine, but my question to you is, how far back are you willing to go? I mean, a lot of these kids, now they have so much equipment on, they lack respect for punching someone, and they also lack respect in terms of being punched or being kicked. Some people are over audacious because they know they won't pay for it if they're mistaken, and some people don't commit enough because they don't have a reasonable understanding of how to generate force or how much force they can actually generate. Some people think they're Mike Tyson, some people think they're Mickey Mouse. Neither one of those are true, but until they spar in a realistic way, they're not going to know. You see what I'm saying? So my question for you is, how much are you willing to compromise, and where do those compromises lie? Check me out at thomasmartialarts.com. I'm on all the places that people go in 2024. TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Pinterest, Threads. I think that's it. LinkedIn. Anyway, you guys have a wonderful day. But the most important thing, as always, is please be kind to yourselves and each other. Hey, everybody. This is Sensei Anthony with the Real Karate Podcast. Rolling and recording on this here, rainy and windy February the 4th, 2024. I apologize for the gap in time. It's been a busy time for me. No excuses. Let me jump right into what we're talking about. Let me talk about the difference in how boxers, kickboxers, and MMA practitioners strike versus the way a true karate stylist strikes. Now, you may be thinking, what are you talking about? All the techniques in MMA as it pertains to striking, or anything for that matter, come from traditional martial arts. Correct. True. 100% in agreement. I actually tell people that are fans of MMA that all of their techniques came from traditional martial arts. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the importance in terms of the difference between real self-defense and sports striking as a mindset. See, a real martial arts practitioner, a striker in karate, for example, they act like every single strike has to be the one that finishes their opponent. In sport striking arts, or arts where striking is allowed, they always act as if they have more punches, kicks, knees, elbows that they can throw. They act like there's always going to be more time to do the thing that they want to do in terms of striking. And boxing and kickboxing, you hear people talking about using the jab to set up other strikes. And in a sportive context, that absolutely works. But in a self-defense situation or a real fight, you cannot afford to think that you're always going to have the time to do the things that can be more productive for you later. For example, you cannot be thinking, I'll throw this jab and then when he starts to drop his hands, I'll throw the hook. You can't think, I'll throw this jab to the body a couple times and then if I can get him to lower his hands, I can throw an overhand right, that kind of thing. No. The difference in the way you should be thinking as a martial artist and people who use striking as a part of an overall game plan in a combat sport like the ones I mentioned, a karate stylist should not think that they have more punches and kicks to throw. They should not think that they can use that knee so they can later set up a round to cut. No. It needs to be immediate, it needs to be quick, and it needs to be vicious. It needs to be with the mindset that this is the only opportunity that you're going to have to do these techniques. So they have to be finishers. In the neighborhood I'm from, we call them one-hitter quitters. In Japanese, Iken Hisatsu, one strike, one kill. I think that people would be far better served if they thought about time as an obstacle as opposed to time as an advantage. If you want to see someone who looked at time as an obstacle in the sporting context, look at the way fighters like Mike Tyson approach striking. Heavy flurries and combinations. George Foreman, Joe Frazier, Ron Lyle, Ernie Shavers, Archie Moore. These were boxers that threw punches with vicious intention as if they had no more time to use these techniques. That is a mindset difference. If you want to talk about boxers, for example, who used time as an advantage, you look at people like Julio Cesar Chavez, Floyd Mayweather, people that use their striking to set up strikes in a different way later. Chavez, for an example, was a ferocious body puncher, one of the best of all time. Lead jab to the face, lead hook to the body. He threw hooks to the liver, and he did a lot of damage to the body earlier on in the fight. And as that person started to lose their energy and as their hands started to come down, he knocked them out with punches to the face. They used time as an ally. But in real self-defense and real striking, you absolutely should not consider time to be an ally. You don't know if this person will pull a weapon that they haven't pulled yet. You don't know if that person has friends or someone who's going to come and break you apart. Anything can happen in a real life situation. So under no circumstances do you think, should you think, that you have more time. You need to look at time as a clock that is working against you. You need to throw a punch with the idea that you will get no more punches, kicks, knees, whatever to throw. That is why I always throw or recommend throwing your heaviest strikes in threes before you reset, whether it be lead hand, back fist, elbow, and knee, whether it be front snap kick and two punches, whatever it is you throw. I like the idea, I like the mindset that you're only gonna get to throw three of these strikes. So you need to make them concise, you need to make them powerful, and you need to commit to them 100%. A lot of people do not get the results they want in self-defense or in fights because they don't truly commit. They think about the fact that they might get tired if they do that. Now, I understand that getting tired can be disastrous, but what is even more disastrous is not committing to your strikes 100%, especially if your opponent is bigger, stronger, and heavier than you. So that's my lesson for today. Simply put, you do not have more strikes to throw. Make everyone count. Check me out at thomasmartialarts.com. I'm on all the places that people hang out in 2024. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, Threads, LinkedIn, and I think that's about it. So, until then, focus on making every single strike count. And the most important thing is please be kind to yourselves and each other. Hey everybody, this is Sensei Anthony with the Real Karate Podcast, rolling and recording on Wednesday, February the 28th. And I just want to jump into today's topic, okay? I want to talk about the importance of rhythm and then breaking rhythm, okay? Now, in the martial arts world, or even in the fight sport world, okay, there are certain things that you learn as a matter of course through the training, and you stick with that thing your whole life, and that's not a bad idea. For example, a boxer can double jab, cross, lead hand, hook, and cross extremely well because they've done that so many times, it is in their muscle memory to a ridiculous extent. You look at a freestyle wrestler, they will shoot a double leg takedown, and if it gets stuffed, they will turn the corner and shoot that takedown again.
In the martial arts world, you may see a back fist, reverse punch, and front snap kick, because it is in our muscles at the deepest level, right? But when you talk about rhythm, and when you talk about breaking rhythm, I talk about that so that you can remain unpredictable. A lot of people stick to the what they call nuts and bolts, or meat and potatoes, or beans and rice, as they say in Brazil, of their discipline, right? And it comes to the point where if someone is not agreeing to those rule sets, it can cause them real problems. Let me give you an example. If you look at the world of boxing, you look at Emmanuel Augustus, they called him the drunken master. And on paper, he was just a journeyman. But he really beat way more folks than he was given credit for, because people didn't like his style and they thought he was showboating. No, he understood the value of breaking your opponent's rhythm. If you look at in the mixed martial arts world, Israel Adesanya, he did not achieve what he achieved through the traditional use of kickboxing rhythm and distance. He would fight off of what they call the half step, right? And karate, instead of going back fist, reverse punch, front kick, maybe you go back fist, front kick from the lead leg, and reverse punch. And the reason is those kinds of combinations do not fit in with what people typically think of when they think about karate, right? If you've been around long enough, you hear people say stuff like, oh, karate works only against other people that do karate, which is to say that only people who agree to use certain karate techniques in a certain way can be effective. I'll give you a perfect example of that. Recently, there was a video of a woman black belt against a much larger untrained male fighter. Now, from what I saw, the male was not entirely untrained, but they talked about how the much larger male fighter was able to do very well against the woman-trained black belt. That doesn't take into account a number of factors, but the point is, because this man was moving in an unorthodox way, and the karate-trained black belt woman had clearly been focusing largely on sports style karate, she had real problems with this guy, even though she was way more skilled in terms of technical prowess. Now, in the boxing world, you can look at somebody like Prince Nassim in his prime. He did all sorts of stuff that people called showboating and, you know, being a clown and all this kind of stuff. And I was never a fan of his, but there was a method to what he did, because it was effectively allowing him to put himself in range of his opponent without taking strikes, all the while delivering his own. Okay. Roy Jones Jr., people said he was a showboat because of the way he moved. No, he said he's got his boxing style from watching roosters fight in Florida, where he's from. And I'm using these examples to show people that there is definitely a value to fighting in an unorthodox way, or at least moving in an unorthodox way, right? If you can get your opponent to try to follow you, you in essence are leading the movement. I always say that a fight is like dancing. The person who leads is in control. The person who's moving first is likely moving fastest. So when you're looking at rhythm, don't just think in boxing, jab, cross, hook. Maybe think uppercut, cross, uppercut. Or there's a lot of different ways that these breaks in traditional thinking can manifest themselves. If you're doing a front snap kick as your entry in karate, maybe you fake the front snap kick, throw a roundhouse kick, and then throw a side kick with the opposite leg. I mean, there's a lot of ways to break rhythm. There's a lot of ways to cause real problems for those who are used to thinking about their art in a particular way. That is why mixed martial arts, I think, was so intriguing to people, because it saw that within certain disciplines, people were extremely effective as combatants, but outside that skill set, not so much. And it doesn't take away the value of that skill set. It just shows you how limiting some things can be if you only think in the conventional manner, okay? So as you're training, I'm asking you, don't fall victim to jab, jab, cross, back fist, reverse punch, front snap kick, double leg takedown, manage the sprawl, turn the corner, and reshoot. Whatever it is you do, try to perform those most effective techniques from a distance or an angle or a rhythm that will make them more difficult to defend against. And that's my rant for today. Check me out at thomasmartialarts.com. I am on all the places that people go in 2024. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Threads, all of these places under Thomas_Martial_Arts. If you have any questions, please let me know what you think about this topic. But by far the most important thing, as always, is please be kind to yourselves and each other. Hey everybody, this is Sensei Anthony with the Real Karate Podcast, Tuesday, March the 12th, 2024. And I'm going to tell you right now that you need to go back and review what your basics are. I'm telling you right now, no matter where you are in your path, beginner, enthusiast, veteran, wherever you are, you need to go back and revisit the material that you think that you already know well. Let me tell you why. Anybody with any long-time experience will tell you that reviewing the basics is what keeps you sharp. And reviewing the basics will largely be the thing that keeps you alive in the event of a physical encounter. It's not going to be the cool fancy stuff. It's not going to be the stuff that sells memberships. It's going to be the basics. Now, a lot of you know that. But what I'm talking about right now is when you are explaining something to somebody, you need to go back and review your basics. Let me give you this example. And this happened to me the other day. If you are a Japanese language enthusiast, if you are a proponent of martial arts culture, a fan of martial arts culture, if you will, you've probably heard the expression or the term Mushin. And it has been translated for as long as I can remember as no mind. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not intelligent. It doesn't mean that you're a zombie. The idea is that you move without the hindrance of your conscious mind to protect yourself. Now, I've said that even before I'm on this podcast. I've said it to other people, a bunch of stuff. But when I was talking to my girlfriend the other day, what I said this time was, and I don't know why, I said, Mushin is not like a reflex, like blinking your eyes, because that just happens on a primal level. You don't even have to come close to thinking about that. You can't even stop it. You do it when you don't realize that you do it, right? Mushin now, for me, moving forward, will be explained as an action that you do to protect yourself after an extremely brief but extremely fast threat assessment. And I think that makes more sense. I think that will make more sense to people. Like I said, you don't have to think about blinking. There's something in humans' evolutionary nature or something that makes it so that we blink without even having to think about it. It's not just about wetting our eyes, keeping our eyes moist. You blink
when you see leaves falling around you, if you happen to walk through a cloud of gnats or something like that, you don't have to think, okay, blink now, blink, blink, blink. That just happens. I believe there's something in our evolutionary nature that makes us do that. Now, if a ball is coming at you and you raise your hand to protect your face, there's nothing in our evolutionary nature, as far as I know, that just makes you throw your hands up in front of your face, right? But on some level, at some speed, you have assessed a threat which will harm you if you don't do anything to stop it or dilute the effect of that thing. That is Mushin. So, I'm telling everybody to go back and think about not just their physical basics, but their mental basics as well. Their teaching basics as well. Because if you do that, again, I started martial arts in 1979, and it is 2024 as of this recording. If you do that, then you are acknowledging that at any point in your martial arts evolution, that you still have something to learn and that there's still something you can improve. I think this is so important. I'll say it again. No matter where you are in your martial arts path, beginner, expert, veteran, whatever the case may be, you are never so skilled that you cannot go back and improve yourself. And I think that's just, I'm just going to leave it right there because I feel pretty good about that, and that's important. So check me out at thomasmartialarts.com. We're on all the social places that folks hang out in 2024, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Threads, that's what it, I almost forgot Threads. But far more important than that, please be kind to yourselves and each other. Hey everybody, this is Sensei Anthony coming to you with the Real Karate Podcast on this here Wednesday, March the 27th. And I'm telling you right now that you need to quit being fancy and review your darn basics. Let me tell you why. As you have been following my podcast, you've probably heard me use the expression Mushin, which has commonly been translated as no mind. Now, if you speak any other languages or know anything about it, translations can be a tricky, sometimes a really, really tricky thing to do. So you do the best you can. Hope that you're capturing context. Hope that you're able to convey the main idea behind the translation. But here's the thing. I've been telling people that Mushin means no mind, but it's more along the idea that you are able to act without the hindrance of intellect or thought. And I felt pretty good about that. I was chest out. I've been telling people that for decades at this point in 2024. But a lot of Americans still have a hard time understanding that or differentiating that from just a standard reflex. Now, if you think about your regular reflex stuff, blinking with something coming near your face, jumping back when you hear a dog bark, something like that. But I wanted to go a little bit further with my new updated definition. My new definition of Mushin is still going to be kind of no mind, but the difference is there is an element of a brief, extremely brief assessment of danger. Now, on a very basic level, if someone flicks at your eyes, you close them. That is not a reflex in the traditional sense, I believe, because
I think that's built into a primal level. In that same place where if someone throws you on the ground and starts kicking you in the body, you will cover your head. Nobody thinks to do that because it doesn't make sense. The smart thing to do is to protect the thing that's being harmed. But on some primal level, you know and understand that your head is more important than your rib cage, so you cover your head. I think that's reflex at its purest form. I think that Mushin has an element of threat assessment in the same way that if somebody kicks a ball and that ball is headed towards your face, there's nothing in your primal makeup that just makes you cover your face when you see something coming. Mushin, I believe, is that brief moment, no matter how brief, that you are able to assess a threat and respond accordingly without having to think about it. So, I'm saying all that to say, for the past 25 years, I've been using Mushin with the idea of acting without the hindrance of rational thought. But I think that adding that small element of brief threat assessment, I think it makes it more relatable or easier to understand for regular folks. And I'm saying for you longtime martial arts practitioners and teachers that you need to go back and review your basics on an intellectual level, because it'll make you a better teacher. Maybe it'll help you explain certain things a little better, because like I said, I've been pretty content with my explanation of Mushin for 25 years. And now I'm adding that element of the briefest threat assessment before the action. And I think that makes more sense. So go back to your basics. Remember, stay a white belt in terms of mentality. You don't know it all. Neither do I. Now let's get back to that learning phase. Check me out at thomasmartialarts.com. I'm on all the places where people hang out in 2024. TikTok, unless they ban it. Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Threads, LinkedIn, YouTube. I think that's all of them. But the most important thing of all, please be kind to yourselves and each other.